League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Pewer.
And I'm GopherDigest.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you back to we go 2 weeks in a row here.
We're on a roll.
Well, look at what happens when we finally have something to talk about with Gopher football. So we welcome you back here to another episode. So on the last episode, Luke and I talked a lot about the Gophers offense here with spring ball just ending. And so with the spring game concluding things for Minnesota on Saturday, we're going to get into the defensive side of things and what I've seen through the 15 spring practices here for your Golden Gophers. So, Luke, I mean, anything else you'd like to add here before we dive in?
First, I think I'd like to say that if you haven't listened to that episode, check it out. It's still pretty relevant. I don't think we've learned anything new in terms of the offense from the scrimmage because of how vanilla, you know, the play calling was. You didn't see a lot out of the quarterbacks and the receivers. I think you still have the same question marks at receiver with all the drops they saw, but otherwise that podcast is still pretty relevant.
Yeah, I mean, the only two things I would mention from the spring game that people saw a lot of was, first off, yes, the wide receivers couldn't catch a cold. Again, the cold temperatures, you not having Rashad still out there, Isaiah Gentry not healthy. It just wasn't a good day for them, and it's too bad because they've actually had a pretty decent spring. But again, after you're starting wide receivers Rashad Still, Eric Carter, and Drew Olatarski, it is wide freaking open. And I had a piece on that today on Gopher Digest about the projected depth chart. And it's tough to really say a lot about who is going to back up those three guys, as it's still wide open. And the other thing I would say is, while James Johannesson did have a pretty good day, I still think there is a clear gap between Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, and then James Johannesson, just in terms of, I wish that Rodney could have gotten more of the carries, but again, what is the point when you know that Rodney is is proven, you know.
He's a known commodity.
Exactly, and James had, you know, he's been in every spring practice trying to continue to adjust to the game, and I'm really happy for him that he was actually able to showcase some things in front of a national kind of an audience on BTN there and then on KFAN. So, you know, while Rodney and Shannon are clearly the number one and two guys, I think if James can continue to progress, he can probably battle JUCO running back Kobe McQuarrie this fall for that third slot if one of the two guys ahead of him gets dinged. But other than that, I mean, that, as you said, that first podcast from last week on the Gopher offense is still very up to date in terms of my thoughts on where things are at.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the defense. That's something we haven't really gone over yet during the spring, particularly. Let's start up front. Defensive tackle, you know, kind of a night and day from where we were at the end of last season. So what are you seeing, and why is there more depth now? Is it just because, you know, some guys are healthy, or have they added, you know, consistent pieces to this depth?
It really literally is night and day from what you saw in the last Big Ten game against Wisconsin, where you were trotting out Justin Carr, Robert Nondelay, you know, Andrew Stelter, 270 pounds, all three guys at 270 trying to get a push against a Big Ten rival like Wisconsin, even if it was redshirt freshman. Again, 310 versus 270 more times than not, unless you're really strong, is going to go towards that 310-pound man. And so now you look at where Minnesota's at this spring, and it's just, as you said, night and day. They can go five or six deep there, and it does start up front. I mean, you get a healthy Steven Richardson back who's, you know, was dealing with some things in his back, some different back spasms, and he had a calf strain last year. Now he's very close to 100% healthy, and you saw a little bit more of him towards the latter end of spring ball as Clay's has been resting him, knowing how important Steven Richardson truly is to this Gopher defense. And when Steven did play last year, I think in the nine or so games, where he was fully active, participating in a normal amount of snaps. He averaged more than a tackle for loss a game. So, again, he's a very disruptive guy, a guy that I think he can play all 13 games in a year. And, yes, the 13th game would be the bowl game because that should be something that Gopher fans are talking about every year. He should be an all-Big Ten guy if he can stay healthy. Firmly believe that. He's super disruptive. He's always in the backfield, and he's a guy that is going to be counted on a lot this fall. Another reason why outside of Stephen Richardson things are looking so good is the addition of Merrick Jackson from Iowa Western Junior College down at Council Bluffs there, a college that's been very good to Minnesota in recent years. Cody Pope, Minnesota's second-leading tackler last year with 99 tackles. Ace Rogers, who played well in Minnesota's opening game and is probably expected to be the starting safety alongside Demaryius Travis. Merrick is adding to that group. He's a guy who's 6'1", 6'2", 320 pounds. Someone who's still getting into shape, but man, yeah. it seemed like at every one of the spring practices when Merrick was in there, he was disruptive. He was in the backfield. And for a guy who is, he's got a little bit of a belly, again, nothing wrong with that. He's pretty explosive in a short burst, and he's someone that I think paired along with Stephen Richardson is going to be very disruptive. And then you get Scott Ekpe back for his redshirt senior year. He was someone dealing with a concussion last year. You get Gary Moore, a kid who has played as a true freshman in 2014. They redshirted him in 2015. Thought he wasn't completely ready. They wish they could have redshirted him in 2014, but he's another guy who earned the nickname Baby Sheed, Rashid Hagman. From when he was in 2014 with Rashid. He's someone 6'4", 290-plus pounds, a big body, someone that Clay is in. Different members on the defense there had mentioned in the media that they thought he'd been playing well. Then you throw in a guy like Andrew Stelter, again, someone that has gone through a serious progression since his first time here at Minnesota, where he showed up probably 255 pounds or so. And now he's very close to the 290, 295 mark. Someone that you wish you could have redshirted in 2014, but again, Minnesota didn't have the bodies. I'm sure I'm going to be talking about in 2017, 2018, how I wish we could have Stephen Richardson, Andrew Stelter, Galen Elmore, and Gary Moore for their redshirt senior years. But again, you have five bodies there, plus a redshirt senior in Shuby Timms. And Mose Hall has done some things here and there again, but I think he'd be best to keep putting on weight. But again, that's five legitimate Big Ten bodies, 290-plus, that are strong enough and should be fresh enough if you continue with that rotation there to be doing some serious damage on the interior. So again, complete night and day. And again, I really hope all five can stay healthy because if they can, you can maintain them throughout the latter half of this Big Ten schedule where it gets a lot tougher than the first six or seven games. And if Minnesota can stay healthy in the defensive line, there's no reason why they can't seriously compete, if not win those final few games. Because that's what it sometimes does come down to in the latter half of the Big Ten schedule. I mean,
yeah, just who's healthier.
Who's healthier, exactly. Yeah. And if Minnesota can hopefully get that lucky rabbit's foot this year compared to last fall where everybody was hurt, that defensive tackle will not be an issue.
All right, let's talk defensive end. This is a spot you've been kind of notoriously bad at predicting.
Hey,
kind of a low blow, of course.
You say one wrong thing, and now here come the shots. All right.
So they struggle to get pressure with four. That's not a new fact, right? I think we kind of saw it again, even in the spring game. You know, they had a couple sacks. But for the most part, I don't think expectations are high in terms of being able to get pressure. What did you see out of some of those defensive ends, and maybe who's a guy that stood out?
To be completely honest, I don't know that there was a guy consistently in this spring that did stand out to me. Again, this is why defensive end is outside of the offensive line depth. I think defensive end and how Minnesota is going to generate pressure from a 4-3. It is very concerning to me. You have Galen Elmore, who I think was probably the most consistent in terms of doing what he needs to do. He's someone that Clay says he doesn't really worry about too much with the pass rush, but in the run game, he's got to continue to maintain his run fit. But he's a guy that is cut weight a little bit. He's 6'6", 270. I mean, he looks like what you would expect a Big Ten defensive end to look like. I think he just needs to continue to maintain his consistency, continue to work on his short burst and his explosiveness. And then alongside Galen Elmore, it is – it's kind of scary. Again, I go from – I know I'm kind of doing a 180, but you go from Hank Ekpe last year at this time was just absolutely abusing offensive tackles for Minnesota with the speed rush. And he was even doing in the fall. And then I make bold claims that he's going to have like 9 or 10 sacks.
And now you get made fun of.
And now I've learned my lesson. And the weird thing is with Hank, he goes from that, notoriously good spring, even from talking with Joe Christensen and Andy Greeter, we're like, we probably wasted a lot of ink there because he was very much a force. And then this spring, I barely even noticed him. Maybe it's finally because Minnesota can neutralize a speed rush and Hank doesn't have any more tools in the tool shed.
Sure.
But I have a piece coming out tomorrow on Gopher Digest about my projections for the defense, and I don't have Hank starting. I know that Hank started all the games for the majority of last year. He earned a lot of the starting reps this spring, but I have no idea how you can justify starting Hank Ekpe when you have a guy like Winston Dilaudy-Boudaire, a kid who's really still a kid. He's only 18 years old still. But he's someone that when you put the two side by side where Hank maybe he is, 2 inches taller and 10 pounds heavier, that's great and all. But Winston has, again, he's the nitty gritty guy that, putting into basketball terms for Mr. Boy Wonder over here in the basketball side, he's that guy on TV. Oh, you just can't keep him out of the gym.
Right.
He's so gritty. He gets after everything,
The gym rat.
He is the gym rat. That would be Winston Dilaudy-Boudaire. He's someone whose motor is just constantly going. He never takes a playoff. His drive and his motor, put together with the fact that he's continuing to get bigger and stronger. He's someone who redshirted for Minnesota in 2015, someone that Minnesota signed 2 days before signing day, didn't have any other offers. And I think that he's proving that, again, he was a 17-year-old kid who, doesn't have the ideal size, but, man, does he play with a chip on his shoulder. Someone that I think can turn the corner on the weak side going against those right tackles. I think you're better off playing Winston than you are Hank, just because Winston has more tools and he's just a redshirt freshman while Hank is a senior. And if he can't get by you on a speed rush, he's not doing a lot. So, behind those guys, it's again, you have a lot of unproven commodities. You talk about Julian Kafo, someone Minnesota signed out of Canada, I believe, in 2013 or 2014. He's a redshirt sophomore. Again, he's still adjusting from the Canadian game to the Big Ten. That's a very big jump. Same thing that Jonathan Femi-Cole is trying to do. And then you have Jerry Gibson, someone that Minnesota signed in 2014. They weren't entirely sure what position he was going to play. He worked some at tight end. He worked some at wide receiver. Now he's a defensive end. They're just trying to find the best fit for him because you look at what he is as an athlete, 6'4", 220 pounds. He's really got to get up to 240 if he really wants to be anything outside of a pass rush specialist. But he's got some ankle issues he's trying to continue to work through. And then you have a true freshman in Teyon Devers, who I'm happy for that he had a pretty good spring game. He had a couple of sacks and a couple of tackles for loss, but he is bone thin. The burst and acceleration are there, what you look for in a defensive end, and then you hope you can just put weight on him, and which Minnesota is going to have to do. He's probably only 210, 215 pounds. So your hope is you get another 4 months on him. He's up to 225, 230 come fall camp. Then he goes through a redshirt season. And then he's at the 240 mark, hopefully, and then you can start to talk about if he continues to have that burst, you have something there, but again, it's bone thin. And I'm sure we'll get into this discussion once we get the linebackers, but when it comes to pass rush, I don't think you're going to see a lot of defensive ends on the field this year.
Right.
So while you have, I wouldn't say an embarrassment of riches at defensive tackle because, I'm knocking on wood here because, my gosh, they have a lot of bodies that are Big Ten ready at defensive tackle. It's the complete opposite at defensive end, and it's certainly something to keep an eye on. But in terms of how they're going to fix the pass rush, I think that you're going to – we'll be doing a lot of talking about this next group.
Right. So, linebackers, this is probably, you know, the position of most depth, at least proven commodities on this roster. And we know we've talked about in the past, you know, that, like you said, probably not going to see a lot of defensive ends, probably going to see some 3-4, a lot of, you know, a lot of Julian Huff, a lot of Carter Coughlin, who's currently not on campus. But, you know, some of these younger linebackers are going to find a way to find the field. I don't know if they're going to rotate linebackers quite like they rotate defensive line, because they've got, you know, more bodies there, and given they're probably going to be playing some 3-4 here and there. But let's just talk about linebackers who played well. You know, in this scrimmage, obviously the Cody Pokes stand out, right? They've been super solid. But those are, like we said, proven commodities. We know about Jack Lane. We know about him. We know about Celestine. Who are some guys we don't know about, and what did you see this spring out of those guys?
Yeah, as you said, I mean, fans are very accustomed to knowing what Cody Pope can do. Someone that is, you know, Minnesota's really had an embarrassment of riches at Mike linebacker the last 4 years. You had Damian Wilson for two. Now you get Cody Pope, who played, I think, a majority of the games. He finished with 99 total tackles on the season. Someone with great instincts and an ability to elude contact within the box there to try to dip and rip and try to get through an offensive lineman trying to get his hands on anything, can deliver a blow to the ball carrier, someone that Minnesota's very high on, and he's absolutely got the chance to play on Sundays. Jack Lynn starting for his third season at outside linebacker there, someone who I think has really embraced becoming the leader of the group. I remember he talked about becoming the leader of the defense, the whole entire linebacker group did, after 2015, where it was kind of Eric Murray and Brian Boddy, and the defensive backs kind of taking the reins, saying, we're the leaders of this defense. Well, now that those guys are gone, and Demarius is a lot quieter, Jack's like, the linebackers are stepping up, and we know we have to be the guys for this defense. So, again, Jacqueline, someone who started 2 years at outside linebacker, now going into his redshirt senior season, he's absolutely going to be counted on. He had, I believe, in the 70s for tackles last year. I think he should be at that, if not above that, this fall. And then trying to replace Devondre Campbell, I think, I don't want to say particularly easy, but I think that Jonathan Celestine is a better college player than Devondre Campbell was. And what I'm trying to say by that is, my first question back to you then, Ryan, is, well, why didn't he play over Devondre?
And why is Devondre an NFL prospect right now, right?
Okay, Devondre is an NFL.
Because of his measurables. I get it. I'm not questioning this. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, the NFL is not stupid. They don't miss a lot, right? There aren't a ton of guys that are undrafted and then go on to have great careers. It does happen, but it's not very often.
The point I'm trying to make is when you look at Jonathan Celestine and you look at Devondre Campbell side by side, it's not even close which one it looks like the NFL guy. What I'm trying to say is, while Celestine may lack the 6'4", 250 pounds, and what he has in his 6'1", 6', 225 pound frame, is he is someone that knows how to use it well, and he's a very good blitzer, something that you won't. I don't think you'll ever see under Devondre Campbell's name as very good blitzer. I'd encourage you to go back and look at the film last year, watch a game, and watch when Devondre Campbell blitzes. If and when he did, he wasn't very effective in getting to where he needed to be. Where in terms of Jonathan Celestine, he is much more effective in getting to where he needs to be in a short amount of time. But Jonathan is very good in the flats. He's very good in the open field. He's someone that I would feel comfortable in coverage as well. But I just think that he's a very good blitzer, someone that is a sure tackler, and I think that, you know, he's shown that he can take a step forward. But in terms of the guy that I think that has taken the biggest step forward this spring, I should say, when I was talking with some people around the building, the name that kept coming up to me over and over was Julian Huff, a true sophomore going into 2016 here. Someone that fans will remember played a lot of stand-up defensive end in 2015 as Minnesota tried to generate a pass rush. He was number 20. Someone who, again, measurables, it's not ideal, which what you would think you would be looking for. But because he's only 5 foot 11, 220, 225 pounds. But I'm telling you what, his transition from, you know, pass rush specialist and, you know, just trying to get or he's a stand-up defensive end in 2015, he's transitioning to, one, the inside linebacker position of a 3-4 and the outside linebacker position of 4-3, and I think he's excelled. I think that he's learning a lot about how to make plays with his frame, how to continue to improve on his explosiveness. Someone that I think is a very heady ball player.
So, I was going to say, where's the love for Jalen Waters? I mean, he had a fantastic game.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, because I'm going to put all my stock into a very vanilla spring game when it was 30 degrees and most of the guys didn't play.
And the throwing was terrible.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. That's exactly what people pay for right there. But I just think that Huff is going to take a step forward. I'm very, very excited to see him when Minnesota does go 4-3 next year and the inside linebacker position. And when my projected 3-4 linebackers would be Cody Polk on the edge, Jack Lynn on the edge, and Celestine and Julian Huff on the inside. And I can already picture you guys in the car thinking, wait a minute, why wouldn't that be flip-flopped? Jacqueline in the middle, Cody Polk in the middle, Huff and Celestine on the edge. I'm just telling you that's what I saw when Minnesota did run the 3-4. I think that Huff and Celestine are very good blitzers, which is why Minnesota would love to bring them in the A and B gaps. They know how to get to where they need to be. Whereas Polk and Lynn, you know, bigger guys, 6'2" to 6'4", that 240-pound range, can really do some work on whether it's a tight end trying to set the edge or the offensive tackle. Again, Savell's going to get very creative with the different kind of blitz styles. You know, whether it's the 3-4 or the 2-5-4,
right?
You know, whatever they're going to do. But Julian Huff is one that has really stood out. Jalen Waters, as you said, Luke, has had a very, very good spring. Tracy Clays, after the spring game on Saturday, compared him to a young Cody Polk in terms of he said that Jalen reminds us of when Cody just got to campus, where he's a very talented athlete and he has instincts and he can do some different things that you can't teach. But what you can teach, he needs to keep improving on in terms of the different angles of the game, the different defenses, continuing to improve at that Mike linebacker position. He's someone I think has already passed Everett Williams. I think that's very clear. He is your backup, Mike. Actually, he is not your backup, Mike, because the Nick Rallis is probably, you know, he's your multi-tool kind of a guy. He's someone that I think is the fourth linebacker, someone that is the backup for the for the Will linebacker, the Mike linebacker, and then the Sam linebacker. He's a very versatile guy. He's 100% healthy now. He's someone that people probably forgot about last year because he wasn't healthy for the start of the season.
But he had a great game against Wisconsin.
He did. And I think he played well in the bowl game, and now he's getting a chance to showcase what he can do, and Cheryl's making sure he sees the field as much as he deserves. So he's going to see a lot of the field. A couple other guys I should mention. One is Blake Cashman, the former Eden Prairie Eagle walk-on. I remember sitting in the press box come TCU kickoff, and I'm reading off the numbers to myself, and I came to 36, and I go, the heck is 36, and why is he on kickoff? I go, oh my gosh, that's a true freshman walk-on in Blake Cashman playing special teams. He's a very impressive physically-looking kid. 6'2", 6'3", 230 pounds-ish. Again, I don't know how Minnesota got him on, you know, without a North Dakota State or any of the Dakota guys coming in. But he looks like a ball player. He's someone that was a defensive back / special teams guy last year. He was a safety come fall camp. And now he's transitioned to full-time linebacker on the outside. Again, he showed some things in the spring game that I was happy for fans to see, where he's got good instincts. He can get sideline to sideline, and he's not afraid to deliver a blow. I think he's going to be another guy that'll be a key special teams contributor, which is, again, it's so important, especially to keep reps off Demaryius Travis, who played on all special teams last year. You know, Eric Murray did as well, and Brian Boddy. If you can limit the amount of exposure to them, the healthier they can be and different things like that. I'm trying to think of what other guys. Again, we've already listed off, I think, 6 or 7.
Yeah,
and that's not even counting Carter Coughlin coming in, who will play. I don't know how they're going to find him the field, but they will because, again, Carter is a special, special talent.
And that's under the Burnsville guy.
Yeah, and Kamal Martin. So it's I also should say Thomas Barber, a 2016 early enrollee. Again, the famous Barber tutelage and just the different, you know, the Dominique Barber, Marion Barber, and then the eldest Barber there. You know, Thomas looks like a kid who's about 15 years old in the face. But again, he's a load.
Yeah.
5'10", 5'11", 225 pounds. And when thinking back through the different practices I saw him at, I think he probably owns three or four of the five biggest hits of the spring. Just where he made contact and there was just a loud thud. And everybody just kind of stood, oh, wow, that was a big hit. Again, kid who's not afraid to lower the boom is a true freshman who should be going to prom next week is probably a pretty good sign.
Yeah.
He's got to continue to develop his body. Again, he looks like a kid who's about 15. I mean, he's got huge legs, but he's a baby-faced assassin is what I'll be going with. Again, so you have all these different guys. And again, plus Everett Williams, who played against Iowa as a true freshman when Damian was suspended.
Yep.
He's already been passed, and he's your eighth linebacker. I think you're doing okay.
Yep.
So again, you look at the struggles you have at defensive end. You look at why Minnesota was implementing the 3-4 this spring for a few weeks. It all makes sense because if you can throw out, you know, say a 3-4 of Steven Richardson, Merrick Jackson, Andrew Stelter, and then your linebackers in the 3-4 being Cody Pope, Julian Huff, Jonathan Celestine, and Jack Lynn, yeah, I think you could probably win some ball games with that. Or if you go the 2-5-4 with the two stand-up defensive ends, you could have Merrick Jackson, you know, as your one tech. You could have Steven Richardson as your three tech. Then you put Carter Coughlin on one edge, Julian Huff on the other edge, and your three linebackers are Celestine, Polk, and Lynn. Again, I think you're going to be doing just fine trying to generate some kind of a pressure. So it's a work in progress in terms of the 3-4. I think that Minnesota probably will mix in a lot of the three different defenses there in the 4-3, the 3-4, and then the 2-5-4.
All right, let's talk. So you asked for Twitter questions, which was a bit of a surprise to me. But here, we do have a good Twitter question about the 3-4 that just came in.
Sure.
So the question is this. If the 3-4 linebackers are able to apply pressure in lieu of the defensive ends, what's the plan to stop the power running game, i.e. like the Wisconsins, the Nebraskas, et cetera? How are they gonna be able to stymie that? Will they stay 3-4? Will they go 4-3? What do you just prognosticate for us?
You know, again, me trying to diagnose where this 3-4 for Minnesota is going to be come that last game of the season against Wisconsin is tough. But again, Minnesota can, I think, implement a 3-4 there if you if you are throwing out Merrick Jackson, Steven Richardson, and Gary Moore with Andrew Stelter, and I'm forgetting, so Richardson, Moore,
Timms, Mose Hall. I mean, there's lots of guys.
I mean, you have the bodies.
You have the depth.
That's what I'm saying. So if you go 4-I-0, and so a 4-I for anyone who doesn't know what that is, it's just the defensive lineman lines up on the inside shoulder of the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Zero tech is the nose. Is your nose. So the zero right head up on the center, and then another 4-I. And then you have your four linebackers there dancing around. Again, so how do you combat that? You can throw those three big bodies out there. Plus, if you do go to the 4-3, again, there's no reason why you can't put Galen Elmore on one side at 270 pounds, Merrick and Steve on the inside at 300-plus, plus a guy like Andrew Stelter out there as well.
Yeah, I would say that the one good thing would be having the ability and the players to have some flexibility to do some things game to game and game plan makes it all the more challenging for an opponent.
Exactly.
And you can adjust. So if we are getting killed by Wisconsin in the running game, we can go 4-3. Or, you know, if we can't get pressure, we can go 3-4. And I think having that flexibility is just a nice luxury that I think in years past we haven't really had.
Absolutely. I mean, you look even 2 years ago, Minnesota was really only in the 4-3, and so teams didn't have to scheme a lot towards anything else. And now this year they have to scheme towards the 4-3, the 3-4, the 2-5-4. you know, a bunch of different things that are going to have offensive coordinators kind of spending extra time on different things. So how do you, again, for the question, how do you combat that? Again, Minnesota still is going to be a base, you know, whatever you want to call it, 4-3 team. But, I mean, you have the bodies on the interior finally, you know, again, I'm knocking on wood here, that are going to be healthy for that last game of the season, because there is such a big difference between Justin Carr and Robert Nandelay at your 1-3 techs compared to Steven Richardson, Merrick Jackson.
Well, and not to mention, too, you know, assuming that people are staying healthy, right? This is always a disclaimer in football.
Yeah.
You've got a Demaryius Travers that's going to make a big
Absolutely.
Difference in the running game,
yes.
right? So
it's
from a secondary from a secondary perspective, you know, you've got some things back that are going to help in that run game.
Demaryius is a very, very good player in the box.
Yeah, and I'm not trying,
yes.
I'm not going to like criticize Kulaende, right? But, you know, that's where he struggled was in the box against the run, against the Iowas, the
yes.
Wisconsin. So,
yes, he did.
So this is where you... If you can stay healthy, you've got a better chance. Even if you go 3-4, right? You've got a bigger safety that can play. I mean, heck, with the depth they have at linebacker, they could have a big package linebacker group and a smaller
sure.
speed package linebacker group.
Yeah, and in Kunle's fairness, again, a kid who had never significantly played in a game went from 3 years of that to starting 7 straight Big Ten games. That's a lot of wear and tear in his body. Now he's been able to prepare for it. I know that he may have left a bad taste in some fans' mouth, but
rightfully so, he earned a scholarship.
He did, and he earned, because
no
of that play,
yes.
he earned a scholarship, and now he's competing with Ace Rogers and Duke McGee to start alongside Demaryius, and he very well may win the job because Ace is recovering from major knee surgery,
right.
and Duke McGee can't stay healthy. So, I mean, okay, Demaryius Travers is an NFL safety that's going to be drafted next year.
Right.
His game in the run fit is again, he's a guy who's 6'2", 200 pounds, 210 pounds. He's not afraid to do some things in the box. And now that he's healthy, I think that's going to be another major plus that Jay Sobel is going to use in the run game. So
yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about the secondary. Obviously,
sure.
you get Demaryius Travers back. That's a big bonus. You know, Duke McGee came on towards the end of the year. You know, Kunle played a lot. Earned a scholarship, as we've already mentioned, but from the secondary perspective, you lose a Murray, you lose a Body Calhoun, you lose a Antonio Johnson. You know, but we keep hearing they've got the athletes; they're going to be able to fill in. You know, they might not have the game experience, but they're going to have the athletes. And quite frankly, at this point, given the track record, I don't know if we can question a Jay Sobel coached secondary.
You are well, you know, I welcome you to try and question Jay Sobel with defensive backs because you see how that works out for you down the line here. As you said, it's never easy to replace your leading tackler from 2015 plus two NFL corners that are going to be drafted in 2 weeks here. But I just have learned to never really question Jay Sobel when in terms of the secondary. Again, Minnesota has two NFL guys for the 2017 draft in the secondary, and Jalen Myrick, you know, who's now recovered from that punctured lung he suffered against Ohio State there. And he was the number two rated Pro Football Focus corner in America. Again, a game that will always stick out to me is that Purdue game where he had the two interceptions, the one for the touchdown. He was just all over the field in terms of covering those Boilermaker wide receivers. Again, Purdue not the greatest of teams, but even still – that's what you have to do if you're a dominant player. Now he gets to play a full year as the corner for Minnesota. Demaryius Travers recovered now from that torn hamstring that he suffered against TCU trying to block the punt at the end of the game. Again, he's another NFL guy, someone 6'2", 210 pounds, very good in the run game and someone that can make some plays as well in coverage. And then alongside, who's going to start alongside Jalen Myrick is a frequent question I get. And the name I'm going to keep bringing up until I hear otherwise is Keyonte Harden. A true freshman from 2015, he played some in the latter half of the season with Body dealing with some injuries, Myrick out. Again, there was just a plethora of injuries back there. And he got the chance to do some things, and I think that he's ready to step up if he can stay healthy as well because he was out for a couple of weeks of spring ball. But he's someone that has a ton of speed, a lot like Jalen Myrick, but in terms of a comp for Keyonte, I think it would be a more he's a lot like Brian is. I think that he's a very smart player, someone that has a very good motor, someone that is a very athletic. But I just think that Keyonte is going to be that guy starting alongside Jalen Myrick. Behind them, again, we already talked about who's going to start alongside Demaryius. It's still pretty open because once Ace Rodgers recovers from that major knee surgery, I think that he's probably the favorite. But again, you have Kunle Ayinde there, someone who started a lot and earned a scholarship, plus Duke McGee. I don't think Dior Johnson is quite ready yet. I think he needs to continue to develop. Zoe Creighton is a guy who redshirted this past year. He is very, very intriguing to me. He was hurt for the first half of spring ball, and then he finally got to see the field, and I thought he did some good things. He's got a long way to go yet from the people I've talked to around the complex there, but I think that what he showed the last couple of weeks has me very optimistic for next year when you lose Demaryius, you lose Ace Rodgers, and you're going to have to start two new safeties. At corner, it is very interesting because Minnesota does not have a lot of depth. You have Antonio Chenault, who played as a true freshman last year, and then you have a guy in Ray Buford who may have the highest ceiling of anyone on the team if he can seriously just put it together. He's someone that you look at and you think, holy cow, he looks like Jalen Ramsey, who is a Florida State guy who's going to be drafted potentially number one overall. Again, I'm not comparing Ray Buford
right.
to Jalen Ramsey outside of they just look physically impressive, damn it. So yeah. I just want that stated before I start to get some messages. But Ray's 6'1", 6'2", 195 pounds, and he's very chiseled. The thing with Ray is even Tracy Clays has talked about it. Jay Sauvelle has talked about it. He's a lot like an AM radio going in and going underneath the power line. Is it going to be that day where it's fuzzy and he's it doesn't click for him that day? Or is he not underneath the power line and he's going to be on and you look like, holy cow, this guy could be a serious player. He needs to have more days consistently where that motor's turned on, where he has that just that edge going that Eric Murray always played with for these years in Minnesota. If he can consistently put that together, he is going to be a scary corner to go against in the Big Ten. And again, I have the projected defensive depth chart coming out tomorrow. On Gopher Digest, and for my backup corner to Keyonte Harden, I have Coney Durr. I don't have Antonio Chenault. Again, he's going to be the guy to back up initially, but I think that Minnesota has a trio of corners coming in, and Coney Durr, Keandre Thomas, and Antoine Winfield Jr. that are going to have every opportunity to get playing time next fall. And here's my bold call here sitting in the middle of April.
Do you want to knock on the wood first just in case? Because last time you made a bold call, it didn't work very well. Okay, thanks.
So my bold call is that all three true freshman corners will play, and Coney Durr is going to be the one that sees playing time as potentially your nickel corner. I am extremely high on all three, but the other thing is Minnesota has very, very little depth that they can accumulate before next season. So I think Coney Durr is your backup corner, someone that is from the same high school as Alonzo Creighton in Dutchtown, Louisiana. And, he's someone I think is a bigger Breann Body Calhoun eventually, which is a very good thing. You have Keandre Thomas coming in, who is a bigger Eric Murray in terms of athletic ability and in terms of the mental side of the game where he's always got that motor running. And I'm very interested to see what Antoine Winfield Jr. ends up being. He's a very physically impressive kid, as all three of these guys are. I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here. So the 2015 corners that Minnesota signed, you look at Keyonte Harden, Antonio Chenault.
Ray Buford. Zoe Creighton, probably safe.
But my point being, Chenault and Harden are two guys that are on the smaller end. They're 5'9", 170 pounds when they sign. And you look at what Minnesota's bringing in. Coney Durr is 5'10", 190 pounds. Keandre Thomas is 6'175", and Antoine Winfield's probably around 5'8.5", 5'9", 195 pounds. What's your big difference there? You have three corners coming in who are 20 pounds heavier, but it's not bad weight, and they're going to be physically ready to come in and play right away. So I just think that Coney Durr, Keandre Thomas, or Antoine Winfield are eventually going to grab a serious spot and be in the rotation, not only on special teams, but within Jay Sobel's defensive backcourt.
Right. And it's good to have these kind of problems, right, where you have hopefully position battles that make guys better.
Absolutely.
But, and then where you struggle to find, well, where are we going to find playing time for that person or for that person? Because that just breeds depth.
These
right?
may be the three most talented guys Minnesota's had coming in under Jay Sabo, which would be making a lot of people smile considering. And I think all three of them had the best offers of anybody, specifically Coney Durr.
Sure.
Again, Eric Murray had nothing. Brian had a Toledo. Derek Wells had nothing. Cedric
yeah.
Thompson was signed after signing day. So now you're finally getting into these battles that Jay Sabel can win because he's putting guys in the NFL. It's how you get a Coney Durr
mm-hmm.
and a Keandre Thomas and an Antoine Winfield. That should make a lot of people excited. There's a lot of talent here. It's going to be especially young in 2017, but behind Jalen Myrick and Demaryius Travis, I think this defensive back core, while young outside of them, should be pretty good.
All right, so during the spring game, or on the spring game day, there was some pretty big news in terms of recruiting.
Yeah.
And that was probably like the news of the day, really, if you're a Gopher fan, because,
yes.
because of how vanilla the game is. It's not as great as some might expect, right? So this was probably the big news of the day. Again, locking down the borders is an important thing in recruiting, not only from just accumulating talent for Minnesota, but also kind of setting a precedent for years to come. So they were able to lock it down the borders and get, and I'm going to butcher his name, so I'm going to let you take it.
Blaze. Blaze Andrews.
Okay, yeah. It was the last name I was mostly concerned about.
but that should be the big news of the day. I think it was that Minnesota was able to keep the top in-state recruit home for the third time in the last 4 years. So you're talking about Jeff Jones in 2014. That's a subject I'd rather not get into.
Right.
Jason Cornell and Drayton Carlberg went to Oregon and Ohio State respectively. I have heard zero about them. Since they signed, so I have no idea what they're doing. But then you have Carter Coughlin last year, and then they're able to keep home Blaze Andrews this year. So all those major media outlets complaining about the Gophers recruiting and whatnot, well, at least they get to keep their top in-state guy home, and Mr. Blaze Andrews, who is a four-star on Scout.com. And from talking with Alan True, our Midwest analyst, and I were very high on Blaze. Blaze is a guy from Marshall, Minnesota, same high school as Drew Himaleski, Mr. Eric Decker for the baseball and football teams.
Yeah.
I've had the pleasure to get to know Blaze and his family pretty well through the recruiting process. And I can probably say he's probably among the top five kids that I've gotten to know in terms of he's extremely polite. You know, if it was a text message or if it was a phone call, he'd always end it with thank you.
Yeah.
Like every text message ends with a thank you. It's that Minnesota nice factor. He's a kid who's extremely smart. He wants to actually become an actuary. And so he's
crunching numbers. All right.
Yeah. You know, so again, someone that is very smart analytically, someone very good with numbers, someone that he's going to take the ACT later this month. And it's very likely he's going to get a better score than I did. And I got into the U, so he's probably going to get like a 30 or something. So he's a very smart kid, but in terms of his play on the football field, he's got a nasty streak to him. He's 6'6", 300 pounds. Someone that I think Bart Miller is very excited about. I actually know he's very excited about.
Right.
He's someone that, again, that attracts all these offers because of his size, because of the way he can move side to side. Once he gets his hands on you, he's a very strong kid. He's someone that you need to keep home, and especially if you want to change the offensive line culture around Minnesota, you know, around this program, and try to get this offensive line into a group that you're consistently, you know, maybe not even consistently, just once every two or three years is sending a guy to the NFL. Minnesota hasn't sent an offensive lineman to the NFL since maybe Greg Esslinger. Think about it. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to get a tweet about it tomorrow.
Yeah, I have no idea, but
is Greg Esslinger, is he the last guy? I'm thinking he might be, but again, that's far too long. It's 10 years.
Yeah.
So you need to start, especially from a Big Ten Midwest school, where this is what this state grows, is big country, you know, big boy offensive linemen.
Yep.
This is why Wisconsin has been so successful, and that's why Minnesota fans have so much disdain for the Badgers, is because, you know, some very much so because of their offensive line, how they've been able to dominate the run game. Minnesota wants to be able to get to where Wisconsin is, in terms of that kind of development. But Blaze is a very great get for Minnesota. Something that I think is going to get the ball rolling now. Again, Minnesota is off the schneid. They weren't. I will tell you this for a fact, that Minnesota was not concerned at all that they hadn't had a commitment yet. They were the last Big Ten school to get a commitment. They weren't worried at all. I know there were a lot of fans worried. I remember a lot of message board discussions about it. But I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Eric Wilson from Benilde St. Margaret or Eric Aboji from Robbinsdale Cooper to soon. I'd say I wouldn't be surprised at all in the next few weeks here to hear sure. that they want to become Gophers as well. And that means Minnesota cleans up on their in-state linemen. I also made a bold call the other day, actually with the Daily Gopher for a piece that's going to be coming out. But my bold call is that every kid that Minnesota offers in state this year, they're going to land. Again, not very bold if you really think about it, considering they may only offer a handful of guys.
Yeah,
they've only offered four right now, and the three offensive linemen and Grant Rierse, the East Ridge kicker, I do think they eventually land. So they can go 4 for 4 there, and then some other guys have a chance, like Nico Bolden from Woodbury, Nash Jensen from Osseo, an offensive lineman, J.J. Drew from Eden Prairie, another offensive lineman. I mean, there's a few other guys that have a chance, but I just think they'll land everyone they want to in-state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you do that, and you have a handful of guys going into the season. You win 8-plus games, which Minnesota should if everyone stays healthy.
That's like the patented thing of this episode, the knock on wood.
I was going to say we're the wood knockers, but
we're the knock on wood leaders.
Yes, we are. We are knock on wood leaders in the Minnesota podcast community. But you win 8-plus games, then recruits are like, oh, hey, I want to go to a Big Ten school that won 8-plus games again. So Minnesota finishes strong. So Blaze Andrews kicks things off. I think he'll get the ball rolling. I think Mike Sherrill's tweeted the dominoes maybe start to fall. But it makes a lot of sense. The only other thing I'll talk about recruiting-wise is Minnesota did land a transfer commitment today. And Troy, I'm not entirely sure how to say his last name. I think it's Debray. Troy Debray. Where's where we're going to go with. He's from Kent State. He's someone that played as a true freshman last year for Kent State against the Gophers.
Yeah.
He's someone that Minnesota noticed on film. And then, he ended up transferring. You know, I don't know what the reason was. Minnesota was able to get him to walk on for their 2016-17 season. He'll play safety here. Anytime you can get a guy who played as a true freshman in the MAC to walk on at your school, especially to a position of need in terms of long-term depth and safety, is a pretty good thing. So, Luke, let's get into the questions.
Okay.
So we can wrap things up
here. Yeah, so we got the Twitter questions. So let's go with these kind of on the quick side.
Okay.
I'd like to get more of like an impulse from Ryan Burns, right?
Got it.
Okay. Who are you most impressed with in the spring game?
Jalen Waters. Offensive side of the ball, Vincent Calhoun, James Johannesson, and Quinn Oslin.
Okay, so offensive side of the ball, I'm going to add one. I'm going to add Nate Wozniak. Dude, that guy's ripped.
Really? That's your analysis. He was good because he was ripped.
Yeah.
How about you give the analysis we talked about off the air? So why did you like Nate Wozniak in the spring game?
I thought he stuck on his blocks a lot better than last year.
And Minnesota needs someone in that Lincoln Plesic role,
yes.
Especially to allow Brandon Lincoln to go down the field and be a vertical threat. So yes.
Right. Okay. So odds of signing a JUCO offensive lineman.
2016? Does it specify?
It didn't specify, so let's go 2016.
I know Minnesota's looking, okay, in terms of a scholarship guy, 35%.
Okay.
And I think that's on the high side. I know that they're investigating some guys, and one guy they were investigating in particular has now picked up late SEC offers. And you're usually not going to get a guy like that, especially if he's not going to start. They may add another 2016 JUCO to walk on. He's a kid from Rochester. Is it RCTC? Is that what it's called down there?
Yeah.
His name's Ryan Just. He's thinking about it. He's been offered a preferred walk-on. He's deliberating with his family. But where I would look for Minnesota to add is I know that they really want to add a graduate transfer offensive lineman for depth. The issue is, so is everybody else. And they haven't come out yet. You know, it's just a position that they're trying to find.
Well, there's also the academic piece, right? Like, that's the other thing.
Yeah, that was the issue with the Eastern Illinois graduate transfer. He wanted to be into Carlson. he wanted to come into Carlson, and Carlson wouldn't accept him. So then things didn't work out.
All right. Which of the wide receivers not named still could emerge?
I feel like Still and Carter are like a given to me.
Okay.
If Holland could catch, I think he'd be something. He just – his hands are just terrifying because it just hasn't – I'm going to say Hunter Register.
And he looked all right in the spring game before his ankle injury.
Yeah, he did. The thing with Hunter is his route tree is just very – it needs to be expanded. And, again, it's not a fault to him because he comes from a wing T offense that ran the triple option down in Louisiana. He's only really had less than a year to try and learn what Brian Anderson's putting down. But, man, is he physically gifted. 6'4", 200 pounds. He made some plays this spring that had Clay's talking, had Jay Johnson talking. I would probably go with Hunter Register or one of the true freshmen coming in. I'm not going to – everybody loves to ask me about Isaiah Gentry, by the way.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yes, he showed out in that one game when he was healthy. The issue is – Isaiah Gentry is incapable of staying healthy for longer than like 2.5 weeks before his hamstring goes.
Right.
I took this stance at Gopher Digest the other day. I'm not going to talk about Isaiah Gentry until he can prove that he can stay healthy for more than 2.5 weeks.
Sure.
Because it's just – it's not fair.
Okay, this is the last question. This is my favorite one.
Okay.
It's somebody wants video game rankings.
What's their Twitter name? Because I'm sure they're going to be listening to this.
Dominant Ghost. So you get tweeted the podcast. This is by far this is by far the best one. And so he sets that Mitchell Leiter is obviously a 99 overall. Okay, so video game rankings. I'm going to give you a name, and then you have to give me a video game ranking number. Okay, this is going to be fantastic.
This goes back to my NCAA 14 dynasty days.
Yep. Okay. Hank Ekpe.
73.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Is that bad or good?
Oh, I was going to give him a 61 for sure.
Wow. You're mean.
I know. I'm brutal. Okay. Mitchell Eidner.
89.
Oh, see, we're like basically the same. I was going to go 90. I like that. Okay. Shannon Brooks.
91, but I think by the time he graduates, he's probably going to be at a 97.
Okay, I like that. I'll agree with you there. Okay, this is where we get to the real important ones, okay?
I like that. What's this guy's name again?
Dominic Gopher.
Dominic Gopher. I like this question
Joe,
a ton.
Joe McMartin, you're on point, dude.
You are my hero tonight
as we're
recording this.
All right, Ryan Santoso?
I'm a big Santoso guy, but I'm... 84.
Dude, he's at least a 97.
Get your homer self.
He can punt and he can kick.
Okay, specify kicker or punter.
Oh, good point. Good point. Okay.
Because if he could be consistent from 45 plus, I think that he would be a much – again, his kicking – a punter, I think he's going to show this year that he has a much bigger leg than – Peter did, and it's all going to be about directional kicking for him. I probably put him in the 80s with both.
Okay, I'm going to put him in the 90s just because of his value add on the kickoffs.
And because you're a homer, but continue.
Because I like kickers.
Yeah, Mr. Kicker in high school.
Okay. Couple more names just because I think this part's actually fun. Peyton Jordal.
Ooh, the long snapper. I like this one. 88, there wasn't a snap that I can remember last year that was just a bad snap, and I think that while he probably would tell you that he wanted to be more consistent in a tight area, I think he has the area to improve, especially after his first true year as long snapper.
Okay, and last but not least.
I'm nervous. I'm like really nervous right now.
Yeah.
I'm kind of sweaty.
I'm really struggling for like possibly the best one. Garrison Wright. Really?
I'm high on him. I'm really high on him.
I know.
It's tough for me to – again, I've only seen him a handful of practices at left tackle. He's going to be your starting left tackle. I just feel like if we put everybody in the 90s, we should be Alabama. And like, so
okay, so then who would be your highest ranked?
player on the team.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Because for me,
either it's one of oh my gosh, either you could probably say Shannon Brooks, Steven Richardson, Jalen Myrick, Demaryius Travis, and Cody Polk would be that to me. And I think, oh my gosh, my highest, plus you have Mitch. Oh my gosh.
So for me, I think it's really easy. I think it's Richardson's number one. I don't think there's any question because the drop off that you saw when he was out was, I mean, not that it was so dramatic.
Can you imagine the drop off? I mean, you can't, like, I'm thinking, like, now we're getting into analytics talk. We're talking, like, war right now, wins above replacement.
Yeah.
I think the only other position you can make that argument is quarterback. Because can you imagine that? I can tell you the drop off between Leidner to Croft is pretty significant. But yes, I can see your point.
The second one would be Polk because he.
I think they have the depth.
They do now, but last year in particular, they did not. And then when he what game did he miss? He missed.
He got injured the Purdue game, and so whatever the game was, that was it the Nebraska game?
Maybe I don't know. His flexibility is just great. And then obviously Travis, just because of what you.
I think you're going to see why Minnesota missed him so much last year in this upcoming season. But
and then I kind of round that out is they're still stronger defensively, even though they're bringing back more offensively in terms of specialty pieces.
Yes, they're losing NFL guys, but the defense as a whole returns a lot of the same pieces and should be much better.
Okay, so overall offense and defensive ranking. This is just a great question.
What do you mean? Like the number?
So like you're playing video games and the defense is ranked
we're talking like a physical number, like an 88 overall or something. And if Minnesota had a defensive end that could – had a few defensive ends, I don't know. I'll probably go like a – I'll go like an 87.
Okay, I was going to go like 85, and then offensive-wise?
I want to – 80. I don't think they're in the 70s just because I think that these running backs significantly boost them. And I think Leidner as a senior is going to be a big boost. The issue is – they need to find depth at wide receiver, and they need to find depth at offensive line very quickly.
I am a little higher on the offense than you are, and for this reason only. I think that, you know, we didn't see much in terms of the spring game. I think they're going to get a lot more creative, and I also think that they're going to take what's given to them, where first half of the season, that wasn't the case. That was some of the frustration. We've talked about that with Derek quite often, right?
Right.
And then you saw second half of the season – they're starting to take what the defense gives them. And to me, it's a no-brainer, and it was frustrating to watch the offense last year. I think they're going to take what they give them, and they're going to be a little bit more creative than we've seen in years past.
Yes. I mean, I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, they didn't implement a ton of new things in spring ball because why the hell would they? Because then they would show the media, and I don't know how much I can keep my mouth shut, but I know that there's other – it would have gotten out. And the same thing goes for defense. You're going to see some new things in the spring – excuse me, this fall. And I think Minnesota is going to maybe experiment more with some things in the first half of their schedule because it is easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they gear up towards that stretch run of the Big Ten where I think they finished the season Nebraska, Northwestern, Wisconsin – because I think the early half is Iowa, Maryland, Rutgers, Purdue.
I'm just glad they don't have Northwestern in the front half of the schedule because Northwestern's good early in the Big Ten and they're bad in the second half of the Big Ten.
There's again, this season has a lot of potential. A lot of guys have to stay healthy, but as we're approaching the hour mark here, I think we should probably wrap things up. So why don't you go ahead and do
something. Okay, so if you made it this far, thank you. If you sat through all that the Twitter questions and particularly the video game ranking things, congratulations.
Kudos to you.
Yeah, congratulations. So appreciate you listening. And if you can, rate this on iTunes. Leave some feedback. We're always looking for ways to improve.
Positive or negative feedback.
Yeah,
while we want positive feedback, is that who wants to hear something bad? We want to hear your honest opinions because those are the ones that make this show better. And those are the things that help us improve.
All right. So check your aggregators or your podcast aggregators in the future. We don't have anything scheduled coming up shortly.
We'll try to figure something out. We'll try to get something with Derek Burns here in the next
few weeks to
Yes.
About.
We're trying to, because he's always around the world somewhere. It's like we're in the world as Derek Burns.
Yeah.
But we're going to try to get hopefully all three of us in person, and then we will hopefully have a show for you guys. But unless there's some significant news that breaks here in the coming weeks, it's probably going to be pretty barren for your podcast dials. But again, for Luke, for I, we thank you guys so much for listening, and go Gophers.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.